Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
I'll expect some more showers throughout the day today, but a high close to 50 degrees, a low tonight down to 22. It'll be tomorrow that you're going to really need to layer up again, especially after the couple of days of 50 degrees. Scattered snow showers possible, a high reaching only to 28, a low down to 18. And then on Friday, again, 29 for a high, a low down to 18. Saturday, no precipitation with a high of 28, warming up to 40 on Sunday. Monday, it looks like 48 degrees once again. 55 by Tuesday. 48 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Year Bank studios. Next Year Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time is 12:30. Dave Malarkey is up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Hello there. Welcome. Nice to be with us on the Wednesday edition. It's your turn here on WISR. Foggy start to the day, but the fog finally dissipated by mid-morning. And just kind of gray out there right now as we await the arrival of winter once again. It's supposed to get very cold tonight and stay cold at least through the weekend. Maybe even a little snow. City Hall today. Later on the program, we're going to be talking about, you know, Penn State had their big dance marathon last weekend. They call it Thon. It raised $11.7 million in one weekend. It's incredible. We'll talk for a few minutes with the director, the student director of Thon. Her name is Regina Dusler. She'll be chatting with us by telephone from University Park. We have a few other guests to chat with later on, but our first two guests are with us here in the studio right now. Two members of Butler City Council, Jeff Smith and Bob Dandoy. Gentlemen, hello. Nice to have you here today.
Great to be here.
Thanks for taking the time.
Butler City Council met last night, and Councilman Jeff Smith, we should mention, there's a change in the schedule this year, because in years gone by, for I don't know how long, council always met on Thursdays. Now, sometimes it's Tuesday, sometimes it's Thursday.
Yeah, when we moved to the two meetings a week format, you know, last year I think was the first year we did that, and we were pretty structured.
Two meetings a month.
Right, two meetings a month, not a year. Two meetings a month. And then this year when we were putting the schedule together, you know, we tried to look ahead at everybody's schedule to have as much participation as possible. So in some cases it might have moved a meeting from a Thursday to a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it's all advertised. It's not secretive. That's all advertised in advance by law.
Right.
Council did meet last night, and wow. You covered a lot of territory last night. One thing that interested me, Councilman Bob Dandoy, was the purchase of some security cameras. You're going to try to stop this vandalism that's been going on at Father Marinaro Park on the south side recently.
Right. Well, you know, Father Marinaro is another one of those underutilized, underappreciated, unknown resources for residents in the city of Butler, and has a little bit of a problem is it's tucked away back on that back street there, mm-hmm. which I think contributes to the propensity for mischief. And we have community groups that are really, really, really working hard to improve that park, to make it nice. The skateboard park that's over there, Cindy Parker and her group are doing amazing things. And to have them do all that work and then have somebody come in and spray paint, or recently somebody drove some cars on the ball field. I mean, it just as we were talking before we went on the air, it's sort of ridiculous that people are expending their energy in that way. And it is just a way of us being able to hold people accountable. Jeff had said earlier, again, when we were talking earlier, he and I, that it's just after the fact, you know. I mean, it won't be that we'll have somebody monitoring constantly, but we'll have those cameras there so that if something happens, we will have a record of what's going on and be able to see who did it.
That's pretty amazing technology. I shouldn't be amazed today. I mean, people can be in Lebanon and see who's at the door of their home these days, but these new cameras that are going in four of them, I understand, they'll be able to be monitored by the city police.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's internet-based, and one of the groups that's helping us out, you know, the Elks, that has their lodge right over there by the park, will be using their internet, their Wi-Fi access, to transmit the signals back to the police station from the park, from the different cameras that, you know, are going to be strategically located so that we'll be able to see pretty much every corner of that park and the surrounding area. It will not, and I think this was a question that somebody raised early on, it will not be able to see into the surrounding homes so that people don't have to worry about people looking in at the row of houses across the way or you know, next door at the arbors or anything. It's focused strictly on the park, but we'll see all of the park and the streets right in front of it.
No, you don't have to worry about your neighbor's drone doing that, looking in your window.
Technology.
I did not grow up in Butler, so I was not here when the Franklin Glass plant was still there, but in the wonderful, marvelous Butler County Historical Society calendar this year. Those calendars are so great. There's a picture of Franklin Glass, and I didn't realize that it occupied most of the site that's now Father Marino Park. That's where that glass factory was.
Yeah, I am one of those people that remembers. Matter of fact, my grandfather, my father, my uncles all worked at Franklin Glass. That's part of the history of the south side of Butler. There were a lot of French and Belgian people who settled there, and that's my heritage. That's the Dandoy name is from Belgium, and my grandfather came over and went there to work at the glass plant. And actually, the building, if you go up to Father Marinero Park on Lincoln Avenue, there's a building right there at the entrance to the park that was what they called the Time House. That's where they went through to punch the clock. And I even as a small kid, as I went to Center Avenue School, I would go over there and wait for my dad to take me home and do my homework in that little building there while I waited for my dad to come out and take me home. There's actually in edges of that park, you can pick up small pieces of glass that is called Cuttle. And it's glass used to make glass, and they're still laying around the property.
They remelted. Well, I knew of Franklin Glass. I knew that it was destroyed in a fire, actually several fires there, but I never knew exactly where it was until I saw that picture.
Yeah. I knew Franklin Glass, and I knew Father Marinero, so I've got all the connections here.
Well, it's good action by the city for really a rather small amount of money to increase the security there.
I think it's one thing, too, that's a very small piece in a puzzle that would discourage any kind of illicit activity like drugs. So when we're when we talk about that, well, what's being done? Well, it's just a small piece, but it is a piece.
There was discussion of an idea that you first brought up, Councilman Jeff Smith, at the meeting of the City Parks, Recreation Grounds, and Facilities Authority earlier this week about at least exploring the possibility of dissolving that authority and making it a commission. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, if you go back in time 15 years ago or 15 to 20 years ago when they created that authority, generally authorities are created as a way for municipalities or governmental entities to raise money without it impacting their borrowing power. And back then, there's a lot of talk about building a convention center in Butler and redoing this stadium. And you know, at the time it was a good idea. You know, we'll create this authority. They can be the ones that we raise the money to build these different structures. But times have passed, times have changed. You know, we're not going to have a convention center. We have the hotel at Center Street or Center Town. And it's certainly not an idea that, oh, we need to fix something, but it's something that it was created. It adds an extra layer of complexity that we really don't need anymore. And you know, one of the things, and, you know, we've talked about that over the last couple of years, part of what we've been trying to do in the city is simplify things and have the city in a position going forward into the future to just be better positioned. And so, you know, once you realize that, okay, we probably don't need the authority for what it was created for, and you start looking at some of the costs they incur. You know, they have to pay for a full audit. They have to pay to have a solicitor there all the time. They're paying to have somebody keep their books. You start looking at some of these duplicate expenses that the city's paying that, you know, there's probably $40,000, $50,000 of savings you could achieve. Nothing really changes. You know, it doesn't matter what the name is on the business card if you're still running the park. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things that, you know, you just don't come out at a meeting and say, this is what we're going to do, because then everybody, you know, they're not part of the solution. So I brought it up to the authority, said, hey, think about this, guys. Does this make sense? Could we make this work? Same thing at council last night. And I did say, you know, this isn't something we want to rush into. This is the sort of thing you transition into during the off season when they're not as busy. And so, you know, we've got 6 months now to think about it, make a list of the pros and cons, kind of formulate how would we do this, does it make sense, and then maybe come the fall when things settle down, move forward with it. Now, somebody may come up with a reason, you know what, great idea, here's why it won't work. That could happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know what, we've got time to research that now and make the right move.
Yeah, you could save some money.
Right.
Why not? Some authorities will probably exist forever. A good example would be the Butler Area Sewer Authority, which was created by a number of municipalities, actually, not just the city, to build the big sewer plant down along Route 8 South.
Sure. Yeah, you know, the Sewer Authority has a multi-million dollar budget, so there's a lot of complexity to that. You know, you probably don't want a committee running something like that. Stadium Authority, not that it's not complex and not that the guys don't do a good job, but, you know, there you're talking a $300,000 budget. So, yeah, we're not talking the same sort of opportunity.
Visiting with us on It's Your Turn here today, two members of Butler City Council, Bob Dandoy and Jeff Smith, are here. I understand that you're going to be changing the tone slightly of the letters that go out requesting donations from tax-exempt organizations to, you know, try to help cover some of the cost of the fire and police protection that they get in the city, really for free, because they're tax-exempt properties. Bob Dando, can you talk about that a little bit?
This is not a new gesture to approach tax-exempt organizations, nonprofit organizations, to make contributions to some of the services that happen in the city. This has been going on for a long time. Matter of fact, it was my understanding that at one point in time, City Council actually made appointments to talk to chairs, CEOs, whoever it may be, of these various organizations to sit down and say, can you help us at all? So, you know, recently we've been looking at some, I call them extraordinary expenditures in the city. The possibilities of obtaining a new fire truck is one good example. That's not an expenditure you make every year. That's not an ongoing cost. That's extraordinary. It just happens every now and then. Mm-hmm. And we're reaching out to some of these organizations to see, can you help us with this extraordinary expense? Now, one of the ways we're approaching it in the tone is simply that, you know, when actually Jeff, you know, mentioned this and take the first shot at the letter, I tried to bring to it two things, and one is my English teacher background, all right, but more so, for about a year I worked for a nonprofit foundation, the Clarion Foundation, that handled our alumni association, and while I was doing that, I learned a lot about doing the ask, as they say in that world, the way that you phrase it, the way that you phrase a letter. And what we want the letter to do is not, certainly we want it to succeed and we want them to consider giving us a contribution, but we also want to use it as a way of recognizing the important role that nonprofits play in the community, and how much we need them and depend upon them for a lot of the services that they provide. One of the things that they do also is they provide a voice for people that sometimes don't have a voice sitting at the table. And so all of these things taken into consideration, not only the fact those things, but the fact that they employ a lot of people in our downtown area, these are all things that are important. We want them to know that. We want them to know we appreciate that. At the same time, you know, we're simply saying to them, if you were a for-profit organization, you would be paying for public safety this amount based on your the properties that you own, and some of them are quite considerable. You would be paying this amount. Would you consider that as a contribution for this?
And I think by making it a little more quantifiable, you know, it's like a lot of things when you go in and ask for something. If you don't have a specific ask, people are guessing, and they tend to guess low.
Absolutely. Say, what do you want? And we don't know. No, we know. All right. And here's the amount we're suggesting.
So what we've – by quantifying, by calculating what percentage of the city budget from the real estate budget goes towards protecting fire and police, it's in – yeah, this would be your fire and police portion. We're not asking you to help pay for the library. We're not asking you to help pay for the parks. Just for the fire and safety, because you use those police and you use the fire. And just a ballpark comparison, if you're a homeowner and had a property of the same value as one of these nonprofits, we're only asking for about 1/8 of what the total tax bill would be. You know, if you consider the county, school district, and local taxes, so it's way less than what a for-profit operation would pay. But we think it's fair, because you know the fire company doesn't look up the real estate records when they go to make a call, and the police don't either. So it's sort of a matter. In my mind, it's a matter of fairness that we're asking for this. And I think, so, you know, when Bob and I worked on this, it was, okay, we want to make an appeal to people to help the city, but yet we want to give them a basis for why we're asking for it. So, you know, they realize we're asking for this, but here's the benefit you're getting from it. So,
and I think what we're doing in the wording of the letter, it also recognizes that we do recognize the impact of the nonprofit in the community, and we're not dismissing that or in any way minimizing that. I mean, they do a lot for our communities, but at the same time, suggesting to them, yeah, we kind of need a little extra help here. I should also stress too that this isn't a ordinance or a law or anything like that. This is a plea, and that's a good word for it, you know, because we would like to keep the quality of services that we have in the city, which is very high. I mean, our fire department and police department are both something to be very proud of, and the work that these guys do, and whatever way we can do is maximize that is what we want to try.
I think it's a very legitimate request, and I've long thought that tax-exempt organizations should at least make a donation.
And may I say that they have in the past, too, that, you know, over the years, they have certainly stepped up and made donations, okay? So this is another time we're saying, let's do it. You know?
And by the way, if you think we're just talking about a handful of of tax-exempt properties in the city of Butler. It's a heck of a lot more than that. I mean, it's upwards of 60, is that right?
Yeah, there's about 60 different organizations, some governmental and primarily the nonprofit that these
so
letters are targeted
about,
at.
Churches, schools, government buildings, medical, hospital, right. That kind of stuff?
Yes.
Okay. It's a lot of properties, actually, in a city that, tax bases shrink fast enough without 60.
It's 60 organizations, but many more properties than 60.
Mm-hmm. Well, those letters rephrased a little bit, as you explained nicely, will probably be going out within a week or so, I guess.
Yeah.
Hopefully some donations. We need to take a break. We'll chat more with our two guests here in the studio with us. By the way, just a program note. We've finalized arrangements to talk day after tomorrow, Friday, with a man who is actually a graduate of Knock High School. He has been teaching in China, teaching English, I believe, in China. He's back home now, and from what I understand, he, whenever word of the coronavirus started to grow, he decided that he was going to come back to the U.S. before it got too bad, and he made a wise decision. But he's going to be here in the studio to chat with us on Friday at 12:30, so that'll be an interesting discussion, I think. He has no idea when he's going to be able to go back to China. And I guess he's doing at least some of his teaching work online, speaking of amazing technology these days. So anyway, that's coming up on Friday. A quick break back to talk a little bit more with Jeff and Bob right after these words.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with two members of Butler City Council today, Councilman Jeff Smith, Councilman Bob Dandoy, visiting with us here today following a meeting of City Council that took place last night. Can somebody bring me up to date on this hearing that's going to take place with inspecting rental units or something like that? Who would this affect? Where do we stand on that? Is this still an exploratory stage, or what are we talking about here?
Yeah, this is something that we're still looking at. It's something that the city's talked about for years. Probably, I think you can go back and find where they talked about it 15 years ago, and the idea is whether or not we should have some process that ensures that, you know, in your own home you can pretty much do what you want to do. It's your home, but when people are renting, there ought to be some minimum standard of the environment. You know, the heat ought to work. The electric should be, you know, the utility should be on, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's always all the urban legends you hear in town about how horrible certain situations are. You know, whether they're that bad or not, we don't know. But it's something that we wanted to look into. And does it make sense to have some minimal inspection, probably when an apartment vacates, so that you aren't barging in on residents, just to make sure that the basic safety issues are covered. But I think one of the problems from stories I've heard in the past, you know, well-meaning people thought this was a great idea. They came up with a plan. They're ready to take it forward. And then they ran into the resistance, and the whole thing fell apart again because they didn't take their time talking about it, getting all the input. So one of the things that we've been talking about this the last couple of meetings is, you know, why don't we have just some basic ideas and have like a public hearing where landlords can come in and say why they think it's a good idea, why they think it's a bad idea. You know, my guess is some of the landlords that who do a good job, and there's a lot of good landlords in town, will say, hey, don't, we already do this. You don't need to add this extra burden onto us, which is, you know, probably it's a fair argument. But then there may also be people from some of the human services, we'd like to have them come. We'd like to have individuals come to tell their story and, you know, gather input, share some of these ideas of, hey, this is a basic checklist we want to do. And once we gather that input, that'll give us a lot more to put this together and come forward. So it's an iterative process. It's one of those things. City of Butler hasn't had one in 200 plus years of existence. So whether it has it in March or September probably isn't, you know, going to dramatically change the world.
So you're going to have a hearing on this to get public input?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's important about it is that, and I think so many times, it's not just city government or government, it's every club board you sit on when you say, you know, what the people want, what our members need, what our members want. Well, how do you know? Well, why don't you ask them, all right? And so getting people in there to say, here are the concerns that we have. Here are the best ways to implement this, too. You know, we may say, well, we need to make sure that these rental units have this. In the meantime, the renters are saying, no, we're really not concerned about that. We're more concerned about this and something we didn't even think of. How is it best implemented to not be that extra layer of simply bureaucratic burden on another renter? Because, you know, we paint with broad brushes sometimes that we shouldn't. All landlords are slumlords that have dilapidated properties, and it's just we're all going to hell in a handbasket because of it. That's not true. There are a lot of people who are renters in this city, okay, who have nice apartments. I've seen them. They're very nice places. They are residents of our city. It is beholding upon us as a city council, city government, to raise the quality of life for those citizens too, not just, you know, the people that own the properties. And so that's kind of what we're looking for. That way, when somebody comes to Butler and they're saying, we're looking for a place, we want to rent somewhere, a young family, whatever it is, those people that we're inviting saying, please come to Butler, they know they're going to get a certain level of quality in a home.
And this public hearing will be at the start of your regular council meeting on March 26th, I understand.
Yep, correct.
At the city building.
And anybody who has would like to either tell their experiences of good or bad, landlords, you know, the more input, the better. Now, that may mean that Bob and I sit there till midnight and we'll regret that I said that. But no, it's important that we hear from as many people as possible.
And it's a very simple process, too, to make sure everybody knows that. You simply just come to the meeting, see a sign-up sheet, you sign your name. You get 3 minutes to tell us, you know, everything you want to tell us, and then we'll just keep sucking it all in.
It's a way better process than, you know, my group of friends tell me what they think, Bob's group of friends tell him what they think, and then we sit and look at each other and say, that's not what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Well, this way we're all hearing the same story, and it works. It's just way more transparent, and it works better for everyone.
There were a number of donations that were announced last night that would benefit both the city fire department and police department. Some nice stuff. CB Rangers with some refurbished detour signs, the Butler Lions Club with some personal safety kits for the police. Good stuff. Even, and I didn't realize this, the Firehouse Subs company, they actually do donate funds once in a while to fire departments, right? Yeah. Firehouse Subs giving a grant that will allow for the purchase of some new automated external defibrillators for the city police department.
Very I think that's one of those indicators, you know, when I always hear people, and it's that can be disheartening sometimes, is when people, whatever happened to Butler? Well, that's what happened to Butler. There are still wonderful, decent people doing hard work, believing in the community, investing, and that's what they're doing there in this community, and thinking, yeah, this is going to help and going to move us forward. And I think that's a good indication of where Butler is.
And going back to what we first started talking about today with the cameras at Father Marinero, not a single cent of city money went to pay for that over $10,000 project. It was the district attorney's office was a huge help, and then local clubs in the area put up the rest of the money. So, yeah, there for all of the stuff you hear about Butler and how horrible it's become, there's a whole bunch of people in this town that really still believe in it and are still working to make it better. And I think it'll be infectious. The more people see it, the more people are going to want to help. And it's not going to be Butler from 1950. Those days are gone. But it's going to be an even nicer place going forward than what it is now.
I know it's not in either of your departments, but we have to be in pretty good shape this year in terms of the expenditure for salt and overtime from the street crews, because we've had so little snow and ice. I hesitate to bring this up given the forecast for the next couple of days. But
God has a way of smacking us down.
Expenses have to be down in those two areas. They have to be.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Overtime is a lot less than it's been in the past for both streets and parks, because the parks department, they're the ones that do all the lots and garages, the tier garage at the top. So it's been nice for those guys not having to get up in the middle of the night to go plow roads.
And there's also an extended thing there, because when the weather is harsher, then of course that's tougher on the roads and the streets, that's tougher on the parks and the lands and all the things that in the spring there will not be as much to repair and or clean up.
You have time to take a call from a listener here? I think we have somebody that has a comment. Call, you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes. Just, am I on here?
Just wait a second until I give them a set of headphones here so they can hear you. Okay, go right ahead. They can hear you now.
Oh, great, great. You've brought up some interesting points there. I'd like to ask, who's going to pay for the inspection?
Oh, on the rental units?
Or the tenant?
Yeah.
Or the city?
Excellent question. We'll have them talk about that. Thanks for bringing it up. Thanks for the call.
That's sort of, it's back where what we were talking about before, that this whole idea is an embryonic stage. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had talked about when Jeff and I first approached it was, is this, and I'm not saying this is the answer, is this a possibility of the owner of the property, okay, in essence inviting us, wanting us to come in and saying, I want you to come and do this inspection, and that gives the city's imprimatur, you know, on that particular rental unit. Mm-hmm. So a friend goofed and said, we can call it Bob's Best. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. But, you know, they are at a gold level or whatever for a rental unit in the city of Butler. So it would behoove the property owner to say, I want the inspection to happen and to pay the fee. Yeah. You know, so that's even saying if there is a fee. Okay.
Right. I mean, my guess is, and Bob's right, none of this is finalized. I had thrown out the idea maybe around $30, because you cannot charge fees to make a profit. You can only charge fees up that are commensurate with what it costs you to provide the service. So would the landlord pay it or would the tenant pay it? You know, that would probably be whether or not generally landlord costs get passed on to the tenant in one form or another. So, yeah, I would agree with you. It could well be that the landlord would get a fee, say $25, $30, that they could then either pass on or absorb as cost of doing business.
One more call, and then I have to let our guest go. Caller, go right ahead. You have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I do. I have a couple comments.
Sure.
I hear you and talk, and I used to own properties, rentals in Butler. And one thing I disagree totally with, you know, is always talk about the landlords and maybe making landlords. What are you going to do about the renters that don't take care of their places? What can be done about them? I have a place at $10,000 worth of damage through HUD. I got paid a decent amount every month. But they did the damage. They did an inspection for the people, come in, told me how great it was, HUD told me, and how much I'd put into it. Then before the people left, they trashed the place. I called HUD and wanted an inspection before they left so they could hold it against the people. And what they did, they didn't call me, and they moved the people out the day before their lease was up. I got stuck with a $10,000 penalty, so to speak, fixing it up.
Legitimate
and
concern.
Nothing happens to the renters.
Well, that will be an issue that would be discussed. Again, there's a public hearing coming up on the issue to talk about just this sort of thing. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Thanks. Legitimate concern.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, and I think one of the issues you can run into is people think, hey, it's easy to be a landlord. I'm just going to buy a building and put a couple apartments in and just live off that money. That call is a great example of the downside of being a landlord. It's not an easy life, I'm sure.
And I said, hey, there are those landlords that do that. They buy a piece of property, they're going to rent it out, suck the money out of it as long as they can, and then write it off. Literally write it off on a tax return, but just say I'm done with that and walk away from it. Where there are others that say this is an investment. I want to keep this property up. I want to keep it going. And so when you have tenants that come in and beat it up, then you've got a problem. I mean, there are solutions to that, and you know, in the courts and things. But these are all things that are going to have to be examined as part of this program too. You know, how we can do it.
Hey, I want to tell you before you guys go, I'm really impressed with the new streetlights downtown. It appears that project is pretty much wrapped up now. I didn't realize how tacky those old streetlight poles looked until I see them piled up in the lot there, the ones that have been taken down.
Right.
And the new ones are really, really nice.
Yeah, that was something that through Butler Downtown, the design committee, and through my wife Julie and the Shade Tree Commission, we put a lot of time and effort into that streetscape design. And when this first step of it is finally being implemented, I just drove down the street. Matter of fact, this morning they were taking down some more of the Cobras, those tacky lights, as you call them. And I went, wow, this is great. Of course, it makes me just even more want to take the next step. You know, it's like when you paint your walls in your house and you say, oh, this carpet's got to go. We have more to do, but I really think it just really adds up. It's really looking nice.
Very, very nice. And one thing that I didn't know was in the contract, and maybe it wasn't originally, It looks to me like, and I just saw this for the first time actually this morning when I was coming to work, because I come to work in the pitch dark. It looks like that they've put little lights on the those stubs that were left from the light poles, remember, that started to fall over five or ten years ago?
The bollards.
Yeah, they're called bollards.
That's something I learned from this project. Those are officially called bollards.
Yeah, that's a new word for me, too. But yeah, obviously the wiring was still there, and they had these little, almost like night lights along
the
sidewalk.
I think that's a really great touch downtown, because there are certain blocks, most notably if you go up to the block where the Cycle Warehouse and Holly Point is, there are large overhangs in front of those buildings. You can't put one of the big lights up there. It just doesn't look right or work right. So you put the bollards there in the place, and it still illuminates the sidewalks, which makes for a safer street, safer sidewalks, safer downtown area. And I think that's a really neat little addition to it, and really cool.
Great project. Gentlemen, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Always fun.
Two members of Butler City Council, Jeff Smith and Bob Dandoy, with us. Hey, stick around. We've got to take a break. We're going to be chatting by telephone with Penn State student Regina Dusler. She was the director of the big dance marathon they had up at University Park at the Jordan Center this past weekend. They raised a cool $11.7 million or something like that over the weekend. Wow. We'll talk about that and more coming up here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Folks, you may have heard of Thawne over the past few days. On this segment of It's Your Turn, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to find out more about it from Regina Dusler, who is a Penn State student and the executive director of Thawne 2020. Regina, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
There will be some of our listeners who have no idea what Thawne is all about. Can you describe it for us in a nutshell, please?
Sure. Thawne is a student-run organization, the largest student-run philanthropy in the world at Penn State. We raise funds each year for Penn State Children's Hospital for kids with cancer to fund not only the funds to fund chemo, but also the research. So since 1977, we have raised over $168 million, and this past weekend we had over 700 dancers stand for 46 hours in solidarity in the fight against childhood cancer.
Wow. And do you have a grand total yet from this weekend's Thawne?
Yes, this weekend we raised $11.6 million.
Wow. That's a heck of a lot of money. Wow.
It is, yes. Wow. We are so lucky to have the support of millions of stakeholders and millions of Penn State alumni and students and supporters and everyone that really gets behind this united mission.
How many years has Thawne been going on up at Penn State, Regina?
The Thawne was started in 1973 by the Interfraternity Council at Penn State. It started with about 75 dancers in the Student Union Building ballroom, and they raised $2,000 for a charity. And then in 1977, we partnered with Four Diamonds at Penn State Children's Hospital, who has been our sole beneficiary ever since.
So it started out in, that would have been the Hub. Is it still called the Hub building?
Yes, it is still called the Hub. So we were in the Hub for a few years, and then we moved to the White building for quite some time. We outgrew the White building and then moved to Rec Hall. And then in Rec Hall, eventually in 2007, we decided that it was time to go even bigger, so we moved to the Bryce Jordan Center, where Thawne is today.
And the Jordan Center holds a few more people than the student ballroom in the Hub, right?
Yes, the Jordan Center holds about 15,000 people, so it was packed to the brim all weekend long, and it was so inspiring to see all of the support of the students and all the people that come back every single year, you know, to see their families, to see the dancers, and to see everyone dancing for 46 hours. It's really just a feat that's indescribable.
So when the first Thawne was held in 1973, you had about 75 dancers. How many this past weekend?
This past weekend, there were 708 dancers, which is the number of dancers every year. And they're all from different student organizations on campus, independent dancer couples, and we even had four alumni that were able to dance this year.
Hmm. And there's no cheating on this, right? I mean, there's no sitting, there's no sleeping or anything like that.
No, so you cannot sit, you cannot sleep. Every single dancer is assigned to a Dancer Relations Committee member who is their support system for the entire weekend. They're there with them to make sure that they eat, make sure that they stay hydrated, stretch, and to make sure that they're staying moving and staying distracted for 46 hours. We have plenty of opportunities for dancers to participate in different programs, to go to quieter areas, to to go to more stimulating areas, to stretch. We have different activities for them to do. And every hour we do the line dance, which is a dance made by the Dance Relations Committee full of different pop culture references, different references about Penn State and Thon. And every hour they do it to stretch the dancers out and make sure that they're moving.
Are there people in the stands at the Jordan Center, spectators watching all of this?
Yes, the stands are packed the entire weekend with about 11,000 people, and a lot of those people stay for over 30 hours, and some people even try and stand for the full 46 in the stands, which arguably is an even harder task than being a dancer. You have no support system, and you're up there on the concrete floor, so they really, really are truly dedicated volunteers, and we're so lucky that so many people are willing to come out and support each year and raise all those funds.
So how is the money raised? Do the dancers get pledges, or do people contribute? Where does the money come from?
So the money comes from all different sources. We have alternative fundraisers. We have our online giving platform, which is new a few years ago, where students are able to share their story and have their own individual pages for all of the student organizations that raise money for Thon. So not only the dancers that raise money, but the students that are involved in the organization. So Penn State, obviously, is a large campus, but there are over 400 student organizations across campus that fundraise for Thon, everything from sports teams to academic clubs to just groups of friends that really want to be involved. So we're so lucky to have the support of the community, and a lot of the donations come from alumni or people that used to be involved in Thon and the supporters and the families of the people that used to be involved in Thon. So we have thousands and thousands of supporters each and every year that come back. A lot of Penn Staters, but a lot of people that also just feel connected to the mission of Thon and are dedicated and passionate about finding a cure for childhood cancer.
Dance marathons at one time long ago were quite popular, I understand, in the United States. In fact, there was even a movie that I saw many, many years ago called They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, which was about a dance marathon. I'm guessing that the music that you were dancing to at Thon is a little bit different than the Waltz or the Foxtrot, or am I wrong on that?
Well, there's 46 hours of all different things that happen on stage, so there's tons of different types of music, all different varying, you know, genres of music, but we also have dance groups, performances. In the middle of the weekend, we have a pep rally where every Penn State athletic team comes and performs a coordinated dance to a music that they make, and there's judges, and we all decide who's the winner of pep rally, and the sports teams really like to participate in that and get to come to Thon and get to see all of the kids that look forward to seeing them every year. So there's varying different things that happen on stage. We have pictures that you're able to take on stage. There's something called water socials where the hospitality committee goes on stage and chugs a water bottle to remind everyone to stay hydrated. So it's not just music throughout the whole weekend, but absolutely there is all different types of things that are played to keep the dancers and the spectators entertained.
Regina, you're still a student, are you not?
I am. I'm a fifth-year student in the Masters of Accounting program. So Thon is completely student-run, and that's something that we really pride ourselves on. And it's really incredible to see all of the students that dedicate so much time to participating and to supporting and planning Thon Weekend. We have over 16,500 student volunteers that work behind the scenes each and every year to make sure Thon Weekend and our year-long efforts are properly executed.
Any of your profs cut you a bit of a break because you're executive director of Thon, you know, give you a couple of days leeway on your stuff?
The professors are very understanding, but ultimately Thon really is something that teaches us time management, and we're able to balance being a student and being a Thon volunteer. And we always say student run, and we make sure that everyone goes to class and completes their assignments. But especially during Thon weekends, the professors are extremely, you know, appreciative and extremely understanding of all of the volunteers, since the entire campus participates in Thon pretty much. So the Friday before Thon and then the Monday after Thon, professors are usually pretty understanding of people that, you know, may have to sleep in a little bit to catch up on the sleep from the weekend.
I guess so. One final question, Regina. Can listeners at home who are hearing us, can they still contribute, or has the window closed for Thon this year?
No, absolutely. We accept donations all year round, and you can donate at donate.thon.org.
42nd year for the Dance Marathon, which is just known as Thon at Penn State. And this past weekend, it raised almost $11.7 million. Student Executive Director of Thon, Regina Dussler. Thanks, Regina. Good to talk with you today. Well done this weekend. Well done.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So long now. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, you know, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month. Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others.
The deals at Tobacco for Less just keep getting better and better. Their stores now include a great loyalty program for valued customers that can help you save on your purchases. Each dollar spent at Tobacco for Less will earn a point, and once you hit 200 points, you can redeem $10 off any purchase of $25 or more. Stock up on their various tobacco products, explore the cigar selection in their walk-in humidor, or check out the great CBD products in their health and wellness department. For all your smoking and vaping needs, visit Tobacco for Less in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Coming up, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about vaping again. This has been in the news a great deal over the past couple of months. And earlier this month, the Trump administration put into effect a policy supposedly to deal with vaping and the use of e-cigarettes by young people. Matt Myers is our guest. Matt is the president for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Matt, you say this policy by the administration is not nearly adequate enough.
No, unfortunately, this is a halfway measure that will accomplish almost nothing. It leaves on the market literally thousands of flavored e-cigarettes of the very kind that appeal most to young people. We're already seeing young people begin to move over to it. It is a classic example where a compromise actually undermines the goal.
So with the new policy, and it is in effect now, there are still lots of products on the market that you folks at Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids feel are dangerous, right?
That's exactly right. While they eliminated a percentage of the flavored products, if you go into any convenience store today, what you're going to see is e-cigarettes in all kinds of flavors, from mango to strawberry to even cotton candy. And they come in things like single-use products. No one should be fooled. A single-use product in this case is a product that has literally the equivalent of a pack and a half or two of cigarettes. Kids use these products not realizing they're dangerous, not realizing they have high levels of nicotine, precisely because of the flavors. You know, it's exactly the reason why it's going to be absolutely critical that stronger action be taken at the federal, state, and local level. There's a bill in the House of Representatives that would do exactly that, sponsored by Congressman Frank Pallone from New Jersey, that is going to be considered in the House next week, that would ban all flavored e-cigarettes, no exceptions, and by doing so, it would protect our kids. I would encourage the congressman from the Pittsburgh area, like Connor Lamb, to step up, because if you're going to protect Pittsburgh's kids, he's going to have to follow and you're going to have to pass this legislation.
Like you say, when you stop into any convenience store, you can see these disposable e-cigarettes, many flavors. And it's obvious that many of these flavors are kid-friendly. I mean, they couldn't be geared toward adults.
It's actually shocking that the government hasn't moved more quickly. Walk into one of these stores and you'll see a puff bar with mango flavor or strawberry flavor. Or, as I said, I have even picked them up and they have cotton candy flavor. Your fingers smell. No adult is going to use these products. These are products that are totally targeted to kids. You know, it isn't a coincidence that over the last 4 years, we've had the largest rise in the use of addictive substances among our kids in the form of e-cigarettes than we have ever seen before. Already in Pennsylvania alone, it's close to 12% of high school students are using e-cigarettes. Unless we get rid of the flavors, we will not prevent this epidemic from continuing.
High school students, what about younger kids, like middle school, for example? Are they dabbling in this vaping and e-cigarette stuff, too?
There are, and it's a very important point. Precisely because these products come in such sweet flavors, and because when young people inhale, they don't feel the harshness that they feel with a cigarette. What we're seeing is that kids in middle school, in very, very large numbers, are trying these products out, thinking they taste like candy. How could they be harmful? And before we know it, we're seeing even kids in middle school become addicted. No one should kid themselves. When a young person becomes addicted, it makes it more likely that they will suffer from a lifelong higher risk of addiction to e-cigarettes, cigarettes, and potentially other products. This is not harmless play.
There's also a shocking percentage of kids who have used tobacco who started with flavored products.
Well, that's what we have seen, is that we have seen the largest rise in the use of nicotine products among kids in over 50 years as a result of these flavored e-cigarettes. What's even more disturbing, what the data now shows conclusively, is that a young person who uses an e-cigarette as their first tobacco product is 3 to 5 times more likely to go on to smoking cigarettes. And the death toll that that will cause, unless we reverse the epidemic quickly, is really extraordinary. You know, this was a wholly preventable epidemic. Flavors are fueling the epidemic. We need to get rid of the flavors. It's clear we know how to do it. New Jersey and Massachusetts in the last 3 months has banned the sale of all flavored products. We hope that the federal government would do so. It didn't do so by regulation. My hope is that the House of Representatives will pass the pending legislation with broad support by members of Congress from both parties. You know, the kids who are becoming addicted aren't just Republican kids or Democratic kids. They're everybody's kids.
Well, the legislation in question is entitled the Reversing the Youth Tobacco Epidemic Act of 2019, introduced by a member of Congress from New Jersey. And you say that is scheduled for a vote within the next couple of weeks, Matt?
Yes, it's exactly right. The Reversing the Youth E-Cigarette Tobacco Epidemic could come to vote as early as next Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. It has over 125 co-sponsors already. There's broad support for it. But we know with this much money at stake, there will be massive opposition as well. This is an opportunity for Congress to demonstrate to the American public that it knows how to act. Equally important, it's an opportunity to send a message to moms and dads across the country that they're going to put our kids above the interests of the e-cigarette industry.
Matt Myers is president for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Matt, thanks for joining us. Nice to talk with you for a few minutes here today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
You are so beautiful. To me, can't you see?
Joe Cocker here on WISR 680 AM. Hey, if you'd like to win some tickets, I have tickets to give away to the Suck Up Theater, where they're going to have the River City Brass Band Octet coming up this Friday night. If you'd like to win some, give me a call, 724-283-2525.